Welcome to the PR Moment podcast. Produced in association with the Marketeers Network.
This week on the PR Moment podcast, I'm talking to Justin Westcott, Edelman's Chief Operating Officer in the UK and Ireland and Head of Technology of Edelman EMEA. For those of you that don't know, Edelman has a fee income of circa $840 million in 2020, down from about $890 million in the previous financial year. So Edelman's revenues decreased by about 5.9% in 2020, which most observers seem to reckon is a pretty decent result, bearing in mind the tumultuous nature of 2020. On the show today, I'm going to be talking to Justin about the last 12 months at Edelman and get a perspective on Edelman UK during the lockdown. Justin, welcome to the show.
Hey, really good to be back, Ben. It's been quite a year or so since last time I was on.
Yes.
Well, nothing much happened.
Yes, it has. A bit has happened. A bit of water under the bridge, Justin.
Yeah.
But go on. Yeah, I mean, for Edelman, it seems to have been a pretty V-shaped dip in recovery, isn't it? Is that fair?
Yeah, that's right, actually. Hell of a year. I think, look, before we went into the pandemic, which was about a year ago from when we were recording today, the business was actually flying. I think we were on track probably to have one of our best years on record, certainly as if I look at the UK business. But I'm sure like many agencies of all shapes and sizes, you know, come March last year, the taps really were turned off quite hard and quite fast by many bits of the business. We obviously, do a lot of global work. And I think quite a lot of our global clients naturally started to pull back. Energy, hospitality, tourism, travel, all the industries that have been well reported, all struggled and struggled really, really quickly. So when we look at the sort of calendar year last year, it really was like a pretty horrid quarter, I'd say, maybe stretching to 4 months. But pleasing, if not maybe a little bit surprising as well. I think things really sort of bounced back quite fast, actually. And I'm now sort of talking to you. Yeah, Edelman is a bit annoying and a bit weird in that our financial year starts in the middle of the year. So I'm talking to you 8 months into our fiscal year, and certainly in the UK, we're back to growth. Yeah, we're kind of ahead of where we were pre-pandemic. There's a real sense of momentum.
It's fascinating. I mean, just to say that would tie in with what a lot of agency leaders tell me, if you see what I mean. I mean, Edelman's clearly the biggest, and therefore I think as a sector we look for Edelman for reassurance sometimes, or indeed fear of what might be coming down the line. But I don't think Edelman is on its own in the UK market anyway of seeing that trend, which is quite surprising, isn't it? I mean, I'm delighted and I'm pleased that PR has bounced back as quickly as it had, but I'm quite surprised. I don't know whether you are.
Yeah, no, am I surprised? I think we're having a good recovery. I think our strategy for a business is good, and that's part of the recovery story. If I step back and I just look at the economy itself, I think on the face of it, it does feel a little bit surreal, doesn't it? Like you're doing this interview from the room I've been trapped in for the last year. It looks like you're calling from your sauna or shed. You know, this is the world in which we're operating. We're not traveling. We're not going out and in enjoying ourselves and entertaining.
Costs are down. I mean, there's a thought, right?
And savings are up, which is, again, part of, as you look at kind of the markets and you look at kind of global firms as well, I think a lot are betting on actually a pretty good recovery and people wanting to kind of spend the money they've accrued.
I mean, I'm speculating, but if Edelman's revenues are only down by 5.9%, and we've all been sitting, everyone's been in their offices in their own front rooms for the last year. My suspicion will be that profits will be up. I don't know, but that's it.
Exactly. Look, and I think part of it is also just highlighted just how much of our economy is now digitalized as well. It's probably more than we actually kind of realized. So much of business can happen without us physically needing to actually see one another again. Which helped with this kind of V-shaped recovery, which I think the industry is seeing kind of at large.
Yeah, but when we look at, I interrupted my own point really, but when you look at that that V-shaped recovery, which, to be fair, a lot of people who know more about these things than me were telling me that's what it was going to be, because it was an event-based recession. But in that sense, the event is kind of locked down, isn't it? Do you know what I mean? And we're still pretty much in it. So whilst I can see the logic within that, I'm quite surprised that the V was not more of a U, if you get my drift, without overdoing the analogy. But do you think, was that because the economy, client? I mean, in the end, you have to have clients who keep spending money. So were they spending money on different stuff, on the same stuff as they were before? You know, is it a corp consumer thing that saved PR? But you know, is that whether the clients are spending, or is it? It's obviously it's healthcare, it's obviously tech, or is it just a whole range of other stuff? Because the brand side presumably did drop off, but that's come back a bit, hasn't it? So it's interesting.
Yeah, look, Ben, you think in that question you almost answered it as well. Yeah. It's across the board, actually. As I said, we're now back into growth, and every bit of our business is in growth mode, including our brand business, which, you're right, it was certainly kind of hit the hardest and fastest. If you think about, so much of the work was back then, you know, tied around events or hospitality. You know, it took a while, I think, for the market to kind of realize what that might be replaced with, how to reach people in engaging ways, and actually start to think about what recovery looks like. So our work has, I think, has kind of continued to evolve. That makes sense. I think we are definitely seeing really interesting mandates now, which see a much more of a fusion of kind of like brand consultancy and corporate rep work, as kind of clients try to sort of rally with the big issues of the day about how they exist in the world in relation to kind of the pandemic, climate change, sustainability, etc., which I think has been really, really interesting. Sectors, as you said, have been really resilient, and you know, Edelman's two largest sectors globally are tech and health, which I think is pretty useful as you think about the kind of pandemic and kind of where we go from there. Our financial comms team were, you know, busy throughout the period. M&As, restructuring, kind of all that kind of financial advice and guidance that companies may have needed at a particular point in time. ESG has been a continued sort of growth area for us. So yeah, look, I think when we look at our own growth, it's actually a lot of it's coming from existing clients. You know, our big clients are getting bigger, that they're wanting to do more with us, and our mandates are expanding in different areas.
And what have you done? I mean, clearly it's been a difficult time for the business, but I suppose just thinking about what you've said, other than that first quarter, it's mainly been a difficult time from an employee communications perspective. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, look, I think the beginning, a lot of the focus was obviously around clients, because, you know, try to protect what you have, be as useful as you possibly can, recognize where we were seeing kind of downward spend in some areas. How can we like move people or invest behind things that we were seeing an uptake in, employee engagement, kind of purpose work, crisis, for example. But then, as you said, so much of it has actually been about how we communicate to our own staff and keep people really engaged through this period.
And what have you actually done on that stuff to try and, I suppose, limit the negative elements of the lockdown on your own staff in that sense? Because that's been one of challenges, I suspect.
Yeah, no, I mean, probably, yeah, I don't think anything that you'd think is great rocket science. I think it's been, you know, relatively obvious. It's really regular and consistent communication, making sure that as much as possible there's full transparency about the state of the business and what was happening and when. Being, you know, fully virtual has in particular meant that getting together physically was important. So, you know, we moved from where we'd normally have like a town hall addressing all staff perhaps like every 6 weeks to doing them every 2 weeks to make sure there's a lot of connectivity between every sort of piece of the business. And then lots happening at that kind of team level, making sure there's a lot more kind of high touch, you know, kind of morning stand-up meetings, kind of social things happening on, you know, Fridays and Thursdays, just really trying to lean in on that kind of sense of keeping it connected.
Yeah. Do you think it's worked? Because, I mean, I think everyone's trying really hard and possibly as hard as they can be as employers in that from that sort of stuff. But it's just really difficult, isn't it? Because in the end, you know, you and I are sitting here, we're both on our own in a small room. So it's not, you know, it's not ideal, is it?
No, not at all. I mean, I think we're you know, human species are all about kind of tribes being together, camaraderie. And I think we all miss that. And I certainly for one, can't wait to, you know, spend a bit more time back in the office and kind of seeing people I actually work with in real flesh. Right. I mean, we've now got, I don't know, 5-10% of our workforce that have joined us who've never actually been in our office. You know,
it's, I mean, that, yeah. Just putting that on, the, what is that? That's sort of 70, 75, 100 people, something along that lines, you know. Right,
okay. Yeah, not shy off that number. So,
which is a crazy thought, really, isn't it? You know, and it's, I mean,
it really is. Yeah.
And where do you, but it, what I meant on it, do you have a sense that, yeah, I suppose that job is never done, is it? You know what I mean? You're not going to. But do you think you've done a pretty good job of those things have been successful, I suppose, if you know what I mean? I don't mean you personally have done a good job. I'm not asking you to audit your own ship there from that perspective. But, you know, you've done you think they've been successful? You think it's worked? That stuff?
I think I said to you off air, there's no playbook for this, is there? There's no kind of manual you could turn to and say, have we done everything in that manual? I think the sort of the manual's kind of been written in the moment, and we'll look back at it again and see kind of what worked and what didn't work. Yeah. And what we have done is pretty regular kind of all staff kind of surveys, just to, you know, check engagement, see how people are going and learning from what we hear and demonstrating that we're learning. And actually through this period, our engagement scores have gone up, which for me is one measure of the sort of instruments we put in place working. You know, I'd be really worried if they were going down, but that staff are engaged or more engaged than they were at the beginning of the pandemic. And I think that sets us up for success when, God forbid, we're all kind of vaccinated and we get back to some sense of normality.
Well, it still feels like a different world that we're told, or I'm told anyway, the vaccine's coming soon, but yeah, who knows exactly when, but it will feel odd, won't it, when we don't have this sort of, or we have less of a nagging element to us where we you know, you can go and actually talk to someone and stand within 2 meters and go indoors and all that stuff. It will feel strange.
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting to see how quick or not it changes, if you see what I mean. It'd be interesting to see how much of the muscle memory from the last year, because of the gravity of the situation, kind of remains.
I think that'll be different for different people, won't it?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I think I'll be pretty much straight back to normal. My wife will be much more hesitant. Do you know what I mean? Just different personalities, I suspect. I don't know, but
yeah. Can you see yourself rushing back to like an arena full of like 80,000 people, like watching some live music or seeing some live sport?
I think when the, I mean, you're, I sound like, I don't want to sound too serious on it, but you're just led by the data on that, aren't you?
Yeah,
you know, if COVID is the cases are low, then yeah, I think so. Yeah. I do. I certainly don't want to live my life in fear, but I, as I say, it's totally personal. I've no doubt some people won't feel comfortable on that. And do you know what, that's, they might well be right. I'm not saying they're wrong. You know what I mean? It's just, it's a personal decision, isn't it? But no, I think if, you know, if the cases are relatively low, then I think people will be confident. If you see the cases going up to 60,000 a day or whatever it was, then clearly not. Yeah.
Yeah, no, likewise, I'm sort of holding on to this thought of this decade actually being, you know, the second roaring 20s, you know, we get it right. Obviously, there's still a ton of work to be done by kind of Rishi and others to think about the slow release and the impact potentially on the job market, which we haven't felt through this pandemic because of furlough. But if we get that right, I think there is some real momentum for some good years ahead.
Certainly, I mean, if you talk to the investment community, that's what they're thinking, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's what, you know, that's the plan, but I guess there's a bit of a difference between having a plan and the reality, but let's hope so, Justin. Now, I was going to talk about it at the end. I think you're helping Element in the UK find a new office, aren't you? And it's just quite an interesting thing to talk about, because What are you, you're sort of moving, well, I don't know, you're moving in a, I can't quite remember, it's in next year or so, isn't it? And I suspect the brief has changed for that new office, hasn't it? So I
yeah,
just...
Yeah, look, I mean, this was, you're right. I mean, this was like, beginning of last year, this was kind of on my, one of the things on my to-do list I was really excited about, actually. And like, yeah, it's a good opportunity in a role like myself, you know, get to... help find the next space, the next chapter of Edelman London. We've had a really good last 10 years in our current space, more than 10 years. And then the pandemic hit at the same time, I'm technically on the hook for trying to find some new space and signing a lease. And when you're kind of moving 550 people, and yes, it's not until October of next year, there's an awful lot of work to be done. And really, we need to be kind of pretty much signing a lease on somewhere in, in 3 or 4 months' time. Yeah. So all the way through the pandemic, I've had to kind of think through what kind of footprint we need from an office space. How are we going to use the office space? And you think about where we were from, you'll never need an office again, to, oh my God, I need to get back into the office. I'm struggling without it. And everything in between, it's been quite a ride. We've done quite a lot of work with Gensler, who have helped us with many of our offices in the past, and with CBRE, who helped find our space. And I think we've got a pretty good handle of what we're now kind of looking for.
How does it break down? I'm sure that's still work in progress. You haven't come to any conclusions, but where do you? I think you used the term when we were chatting before, PR firms basically became email factories for a few years there, didn't they? And it's, you're not really looking to replicate that. So
there's no point having an office and refer to it being many offices you'd walk through. Once you get past the kind of nice meeting rooms and the nice foyer, are really kind of factories for email production. And that's really not the point. And we've proven through the pandemic and business performance that you can be successfully on business metrics without the need for an office. So it puts into question, well, what is the role of the office? And as I said, whilst business metrics are looking good, everyone kind of feels, and you speak to pretty much all our staff, and they all are really looking forward to spending time with each other again in various forms. You know, we've got some people who realize that a big bulk of their work can be done from home, they need focus, and they're writers maybe. And we've got others who are, high in the kind of creative, production process, need high touch, need to be around. And I think the key for us is the office is going to be and feel different, but it's going to be really, really important. I say it's about all the C's: convening, collaborating, kind of coaching, curation. Like, it's such an important part. And the office for Edelman really says...
What does that mean in office design? What does that... Does that mean you have more sociable areas, does it?
Yeah.
I'm just trying to work out what that, because I mean, that's, I don't think anyone would disagree with that, is it? You want offices to be a center for collaboration and places where people want to go, don't have to go to the extent that they used to pre the lockdown. But that's what that looks like in reality, does it? You're trying to create more social spaces.
Much more, and spaces that just like easier for that kind of collaboration to happen, and more kind of, whether it's more kind of casual seating, whether it's kind of more kind of open space kind of meeting rooms for larger groups to kind of work, whether it's easier space to actually go through a creative process, review work, we're kind of figuring all that through, and we've got time to kind of figure out what the insides look like.
Yeah.
From a space perspective, I think we've come to realize that we probably need a little bit less space. Bear in mind, we're kind of baking in growth. We'll probably end up taking a floor plate that's a little bit smaller than we have right now, but not much, because actually we need more space to ensure that collaborative work happens. And in a, I think we're for a while going to have to talk about, COVID safe environments.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Because you, part of an office, that buzz of an office means that you don't want too much space, because if everyone's spread out over a large area, you don't get that collaboration, do you? But at the same time, some people go to the office to get some peace and quiet and to think. So it'll be interesting to go around a few offices over the next few years and just see how different people have interpreted that brief, if you like, because it's in a sense the open plan office, they all broadly looked the same, didn't they, for a good 10, 15, 20 years there. And I suspect it's all about to be shaken up a little bit.
Yeah, I think it's a really interesting time to be, if you're in that industry, thinking about office design, I think it's a good time to be in it. I think when we give you a tour of our new office in October 2022, Ben, it'll feel different to where we are right now. Because I think it's going to have to, it just needs to cater for more, for different types of work.
And on a related theme, there's a lot of chat about three and two in terms of how many days people go to the office a week and all that. Where are Edelman on that? Have you worked out a plan on that, or are you still?
No, we're not quite set on whether it should be something that's mandated or not. I think so much of good flexible working, and that's something we were doing pre-pandemic, which I think helped us, make the move to this current environment a little bit easier than it would have been otherwise. But true flexibility is the word flexibility. It's not about saying, hey, Ben, I don't work in the office on Tuesdays. It's about saying, hey, on this Tuesday, it's going to be easier for me to do my work at home. But if on the Wednesday, the client wants to come in and everyone needs to be in the meeting room, you've got the ability and you need to be able to come into the office. So I think for us, we're kind of figuring out what that looks like. It probably will net out somewhere around an expectation of like 3 days in the office feels about right. But I'm not quite sure we'll get to a point where we set it as a policy or a mandate. I think it's about trusting people to know what's right.
Yeah. Okay. Just finish up on that. Managing Edelman as a business, if you like, through the lockdown. Mm-hmm. You're, as I mentioned in my intro, you've been chief operating officer there in the UK and Ireland. So it's, what is it, about 550 person agency or thereabouts. So, that's a big consultancy business to try and manage remotely, isn't it? I think I talk to agency leaders of 10 people and they say it's hard to lead a business remotely. How has it been to manage a 550 people agency business remotely?
Yeah, I'd be lying to say it was easy. As I kind of alluded to a little bit earlier, it's much more of a constant focus than it would have been if we're just operating before. I think that every couple of days I'm kind of looking at data and information or speaking to colleagues about what is or isn't working.
What sort of data?
Yeah, as I said, anything from kind of employee engagement scores, performance on client billings, looking at kind of utilization, getting qualitative and quantitative feedback from client leads or kind of our MDs for various practices, just to kind of see what's working and keep learning and keep figuring out how we can carry things forward. Okay. We did quite early on in the process set out quite a few guidelines and recommendations to team members and client leads and our MDs about, I think how we all should be sharing a lot more forbearance about everyone's kind of working conditions. It's hard when you're not in the office to actually know how someone really is feeling. it's very two-dimensional. Someone can have their camera off. And it'd be very easy to assume that everyone's fine when maybe they're not, maybe they're having a hard time. We also did quite a lot of guidance recommendations around things like making sure meetings weren't half an hour or an hour by default. It's like think about making them 20 minutes or 50 minutes. Try and just be a little bit more cognizant to the way everyone's kind of working.
But it must, it's complicated though, isn't it? Because as you say,
it's so complicated.
Instead of going up to someone and having a chat, you've got to ring them up, which just by default is more, it's kind of a different type of, and then you start writing an email, and then that doesn't work as a communication channel. So it's just all of that at scale is must have taken a fair bit of managing, I would imagine.
Yeah, it is. And again, we keep trying things and seeing what works. Some things have been working quite well is, for example, I do like an open office hours where I'm just sat on a Teams call for an hour and people can drop in or drop out if they need to. Sometimes they do, sometimes they don't, but at least I'm there and available. It's kind of equivalent of almost like being in the office and being available.
Yeah.
So I really miss those serendipitous kind of, you can get so much done in 5 minutes.
Yeah, and those moments.
No one schedules 5 minutes.
Yeah.
So how do you recreate?
I was going to say, have you been Maybe you enjoy them because no one turns up and you're just sitting there on your own for an hour. I've
had a couple of sessions where I've been really, really productive. but equally, I've had some really busy sessions where I think I was probably more productive because I was helping people or engaging with people in different ways.
Yeah.
I know some of our teams do kind of like work along sessions where they're all working, but have teams running the background to try to recreate that experience of kind of being on a desk. And that kind of stuff has been helpful.
I tried that with a few people, having the audio on Zoom. But in the end, it all just felt a bit creepy, so we knocked it on the head. But we gave it a go. But what about you? Has anything not worked? Something you tried but not worked that you thought was going to work?
Really good question. No, I mean, I think getting the cadence of communications right is really important. I think the knee jerk right beginning was probably to over communicate, which is probably right, but then recognizing the right time to kind of peel back, because whilst communication about and around the business is really, really important, we also have to recognize that people were working in really challenging situations, you know, long hours, no separation from work and home life balance. So every time you put in a call or an update from the business was actually taking away potentially some time they would be working on client work. So getting that right balance, I think, was really important.
We did. There was sort of a bit of a subconscious challenge, 6 hours of Zoom calls today. You know what I mean? It was just getting completely out of hand, wasn't it? And obviously at that point, you learn up till 1 o'clock in the morning doing the work that you agreed to do in the Zoom calls, if you see what I mean. So it was just, totally. I think all of us have been on a journey with that.
Yeah, and I think just recognizing what's really, really important and kind of focusing on that. Like there were kind of maybe some reports that we used to do in the business that were useful and people got used to them. But actually, when you step back and go, well, no one's really paying attention to this, so let's just stop it. so a bit of kind of like admin amnesty is also.
To what extent have you? I get the feeling it's kind of a bit business. You know, the business has evolved, but it's there haven't been any. You haven't, in essence, had to replumb the consultancy operation particularly. Is that fair to say? It's not, you know, it's been
we kind of did that a couple of years ago, really. I mean, I think the strategy we set out of kind of trying to operate much more like one business, like Edelman London, and now Edelman kind of EMEA, you know, breaking down any of the internal silos or friction, has really, really helped. And during this pandemic, that's the one thing that's also been almost like one of the benefits, which I think has helped with our growth, but also helped probably speed up the strategy, is actually the availability of senior people, because they're not on a plane for X number of hours or kind of bouncing around the country. Like they can be on a call really, really quickly. So clients have maybe had more access and seen more visibility of senior people, which I think is always a good thing. And B, when it comes to the work and the consultancy, we've been able to, you know, expand and evolve our kind of mandates. I just look at, whilst last year was bloody challenging, as we all know, it was our most awarded year ever in the UK for our creative work in particular. And I think what we're doing with our earned creative proposition, which is not just for consumer-facing brands, but for everything we do, you know, unlocking corporate challenges through breakthrough creativity, it's resonating. It's kind of working, and internally the business are really behind that.
Right. Just look at you have a split role, I know. You also run Edelman's tech division in EMEA. Yeah. I mean, you said earlier that tech's had a pretty good time, and sometimes a bit more than a pretty good time. That's just gonna grow and accelerate, isn't it? The march of tech. Does anyone see any difference to that, or do you just see that, and therefore a PR agency's role within that is going to do the same? Is it?
Yeah, look, I think it's. I'm not just biased because, you know, I'm a tech guy at heart, and it's kind of where I, you know, the career I've grown up with. Technology is inevitable. You know, it's a forever progressing and an ever building thing. Back when I started out, tech companies, you know, doing kind of nuts and bolts and kind of bits and zeros and building the infrastructure. today, like, hard pushed to find a company that doesn't in some way describe itself as a technology company, either because it's either building technology or technology has fundamentally changed the way in which it does its kind of business. And therefore, I think, you know, for a PR agency or any comms agency to have a very strong kind of technology kind of offer and expertise is only going to be beneficial. But the market's growing. And, you know, I'm actually quite excited about the opportunity in EMEA for kind of homegrown businesses. I mean, we're starting to see much more investment from the VC market. We're seeing a good number of companies go through Series D, Series E, get up to billion-dollar valuations, et cetera. I think the future looks promising for the EMEA region, where previously we've really been kind of net customers, net buyers of American tech. We still are. But I can see some signs of, you know, future technology innovations coming out of this region, which for me is really, really exciting.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Yeah. Now, another area that's exciting is ESG, isn't it? If you talk to, well, that is something that has the potential anyway to really move public relations up the food chain, if that is the right phrase. I mean, ESG seems to be, it's a very important area for the investment community, no doubt, corporate community, absolutely, and therefore a big opportunity for communications. Obviously, Chuck has left, Edelman. Where do you see Edelman's ESG offering in the UK and at the moment? Because that's clearly something that's going to help drive your growth as well, right?
Yeah, look, ESG is, it has been for a while, a growing part of our business. So, you know, we had a fully fledged and well-performing ESG team before Chucker came in locally to sort of galvanize it and give it more energy, which he did fantastically well. So, you know, Chucker's been great at building up the visibility of that team and helping bringing in mandates for them to kind of work. And trust me, at the moment, he leaves a really, really busy team doing lots of really interesting work. So, yeah, it continues to grow. It continues to be really, really important. You just have to look at, I think there's, if I remember rightly, something like £40 trillion worth of assets currently that are going through and applying ESG data. And that's grown eightfold in about 4 years. So I don't think we're too far away from getting to a point where all the global kind of managed assets will be going through ESG data.
No,
and that just
you don't have the ESG performance, you won't be able to get investment.
No,
that's true now. So, you know, it's absolutely. Yeah.
And more so, I mean, as I said, we're seeing a great kind of handover of wealth, if that makes sense. To I hate using the term millennial, but let's use it for argument's sake to set the context here, to these sort of slightly more millennial kind of investors, you know, younger investors who rightly really care about these things. Are gonna start kind of, you know, putting their capital where they see positive action coming.
I think that's where it started, but I get the sense that the investment community almost across the board, ESG is a huge priority.
Oh, so I 100%.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Justin, we're out of time. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
That's my pleasure. Cheers, Ben.
Thanks for listening to the PR Moment podcast, produced in association with the Marketeers Network.
If you'd enjoyed the show, please do review us on iTunes and give us a decent rating.